So we left off last week. We're discussing a chiddush that a group of Pelskim had, that if a woman experiences a hargosha, she has some kind of a sensation, even though she looks and she doesn't see anything, so we have to be afraid that maybe there really was a riyazdam. That hargosha is not just a condition that's necessary for a woman to become a surah, but hargosha could actually prove to us that there was an actual riyazdam, even though we didn't really see it. She must have missed it, must have got lost somewhere in the shuffle, but we have to assume that there was a riyazdam there. So we pointed out that chiddush of the Rishonim was highly questionable. There were many poskim who questioned all the rayas. We didn't really have any clear-cut, ironclad raya to that effect. And then we pointed out that the din is even more questionable with manazer because we're not really sure what hagosha is. So we said that most probably meikamikradin, this doesn't really apply anymore. That if a woman feels some kind of a sensation of wetness, damn, this whatever it is. So we're very very suspect whether that's really hagosha in the first place. And even if it is hagosha, to therefore assume every time a woman feels any moisture is automatically considered to be riyas nidas is really a chumra gabi chumra gabi chumra. So we said meikamikradin, the whole thing doesn't really apply to manazer. Nevertheless, the poskim, the more contemporary, last couple hundred years poskim, have pointed out that we still try to follow this idea of the Shulchan Aruch, at least to some degree. And this is where we left off here last week with the Eitzah of the Chayyodom. The Chayyodom suggests that maybe we should be chashish for this idea that these quasi-hargoshes maybe create this type of a chashash that the woman may have really seen dam that we missed. But says the Chayyodom, if this woman could prove to us that she's not from this type of a woman, if she could prove to us based on her own patterns that she does experience these feelings of wetness and moisture, and it doesn't automatically indicate that she's a nida, if she can be machzik herself, that she in fact doesn't have a riyas nida all the time, so then that should be sufficient. So the Chayyodom came up with this idea that we follow like the idea of three times, of chazocha, that let the woman, every time she starts to feel these kinds of moistures and wetness, let her check herself. Let her go run to do a bedika. So I'll say, Monday morning, all of a sudden, she's at work, and she realizes that she feels a little bit of something funny, a little bit of a discharge, something. She should run to the bathroom and check herself and see. There's nothing there. So she does a bedika. There's nothing there. So one time. Then it happens again the next day. It happens again the next day. Three times in a row. So she's been machzik herself that she has discharges, which are not riyas nidas. So Chayyodom says, if the woman can prove to us that that's the case, then she doesn't have to be concerned anymore. Then she doesn't have to worry for the rest of her life that she's this kind of a woman. So that was the eights that the Chayyodom gave. So it's still a chumr and a kula. It's a chumr to insist on doing these three bedikas. It's a kula that once she does these three bedikas, then she's home free. She doesn't have to be concerned anymore. So Rav Moshe writes to the tshuva that he finds this idea of the Chayyodom somewhat troubling. He said, is this really a chazaka? This is going to prove to us beyond the shadow of a doubt that the woman is not going to be sidam. Says Rav Moshe, when is she doing these three bedikas? Let's say for argument's sake, a woman's pregnant. So it's a fifth month pregnancy, she feels a little bit of wetness, so she runs to do a bedika. That doesn't prove anything. The woman when she's pregnant is misulekas damim, that she usually doesn't bleach. She's not supposed to get a period when she's pregnant. So what kind of a proof is that going to be that the woman doesn't experience these re'iyas associated with hargoshes at other times of a cycle? So she's going to check for us when she's nursing. She's also not going to prove anything. Says Rav Moshe, she's going to check for us on day 20 of her cycle. Day 20 of her cycle. She never gets a period on day 20 of her cycle. So how is a bedika in pregnancy and nursing on day 20 of a cycle, how is that going to prove on day 28 of a cycle? So the whole thing, says Rav Moshe, you have to prove every single time. You have to do three bedikas at a time when she's most likely to get a period, and then alpha b'chein she's not getting it. So Rav Moshe, in the of herself, so Rav Moshe didn't really understand how this eighth of the three times solves the world's problems. Whatever it is, alpha b'chein, the poskim are somewhat more makel about these bedikas. Probably because we're not really sure they came in the first place. We're not really sure you need them in the first place. If anything, we're probably pretty certain that you don't need them in the first place. That this whole thing really doesn't exist. At least for us, it doesn't really exist. Meikra din. So Lamaisa.
That you need the
bedika,
but it isn't like
chazaka. I don't know. Ramesh writes he doesn't. I mean, would Ramesh insist that she has to do 55 bedikas? Means every single possible permutation of a cycle, she has to do bedikas. I don't know. I'm not sure Ramesh Lamaisa would say. At the end of the day, there are really two different approaches to this in the contemporary poskim. So there are some poskim who say, yeah, we follow the chayodim, and that's it, and we insist on those three bedikas. So when do you tell the woman to do these three bedikas? So in theory, the woman could do them before she gets married. Let her do bedikas when she's a kala. Before she's a kala, let her do bedikas. That way she knows that she never has to worry about this. But tell single girls to start doing bedikas, that doesn't sit right. So what some poskim recommend is, as soon as a woman gets married, so the first couple of times that she has these quasi-hargoshes, you have to a marriage, she should quickly run, go do bedikas, do it three times, and not worry about it anymore. That's what many poskim say. So if you look in a lot of the English, you know, Hukas Nida, the Kitzah books, that's usually like the recommendation. That's what a lot of kala teachers teach the girls. They should be machzik themselves as not being roa machmas these hargoshes, and then not to worry about it anymore. There are other poskim who say The whole thing may not even work. All these bedikas may not even work, and you probably don't need them in the first place. So I tell you the truth, I've had some tough experience with telling girls these kinds of bedikas, because people, when you, there's a cloud god, when you tell somebody, it's like, what's the mushroom go? When you tell somebody not to think about elephants. So you tell them not to think about elephants, they would inevitably think about elephants. So if you tell somebody, okay, the first three times you get these hargashas, so you should immediately go run to bedikas, you can be sure that within 30 seconds they will have these quote-unquote hargashas. If you don't tell them about it, then they somehow never heard of it. That doesn't come. So I remember once I had a story where a woman called me as she had gotten married a couple of days before, and she had called me. She's getting very, very, very nervous, and she's paranoid about having these hargashas, and every 5 minutes she's checking herself. And it happened to be where I was talking on the phone. It was a very, very bad cell phone connection, and I could barely hear what she was saying, and she could barely hear what I was saying. I was screaming on the top of my lungs about, so what are you feeling? What are you feeling? What's a... Then I noticed there were 20 people standing around me. I thought I was absolutely out of my mind. So I had a little bit of Chalish Nadas at that point. Maybe it's a Simon Lomar Shemayim. Maybe it was a Simon Shemayim. We should cut out some of these bedikas. I'll tell you the truth. I tell the kallahs whatever the kallah teacher told them. If the kallah teacher told them they should do the bedikas, do the bedikas. The kallah teacher didn't tell them the bedikas. I'm not a big fan of running to go run to do these bedikas. I don't know. Somehow, woman wants to do it, wants to feel that she's been yaitzeh. This chay adam's chashash. So matay, those who, for whatever reason, don't do it, so they shouldn't. If your wife didn't do it for the last 30 years, you don't have to feel such chalish adas. Because the bottom line is the whole thing is really a tremendous chiddush. The whole chiddush of these rishonim was a tremendous chiddush. We said that the Rambam himself wasn't even sure that the din is true, and most probably doesn't apply bisman hazeh. Then there were some poskim who wanted to have another sniff lahokel. Some poskim suggested that in the olden days, so we know from the Gemara, so the Rishonim, the women didn't wear underwear. That's why the Gemara speaks about all kind of ksavim showing up on the bottom of legs and all kind of strange places. Bisman hazeh, women wear underwear. So if there really was a riyaz dam, what do you mean she missed it? Where did it go? So obviously, if there's no dam in her underwear, so it's under, of course she didn't have a riyah. So some poskim want to argue that maybe the wearing of underwear is like a shtukul bedika. Now again, we wouldn't say that, let's say, for bedikas of Shivanikiyam and for Vestas. Anything which is a real bedika, when Halacha really requires a bedika, we wouldn't say the mere wearing of underwear constitutes a bedika. But something which is not a real bedika in the first place, something which is not a real chashash in the first place, and maybe not such a real bedika, can solve the problem. So shtukul pesha, also pesha hit there. So again, you have a few tzadim lahokel. So those women who do these three bedikas right after they get married, tovel echem bracha, those women who don't do them, so shouldn't feel so terrible about the yesh milismach, that these whole bedikas may not even apply bizman hazeh. And now we begin a new topic. It was the Shiraim of last week. Now we begin a new topic. Another possible scenario where a woman may become a Nida without having real Re'ez Dam. Not that there was no Re'ez Dam, it means we didn't see the Dam. Just because we didn't see the Dam, so that doesn't necessarily indicate that there was no Dam. So this is a sugya that actually has its roots in the Gemara itself. It's Machlekes HaTanoim, at the beginning of the third Perek of Maseches Nida, about the following Shaila, which is going to become very, very relevant. The Shaila itself is not as relevant, but the applications of the Shaila for us become very, very relevant. So the Tanoim, Rabbi Yudan, the Chachamim, had a Machlekes actually in the Mishnah, the first Mishnah, the third Perek of Maseches Nida, about the following question. We know there's halacha when a woman gives birth, so she becomes tameya tumas yoledes, which is pretty much the same as nida, a little bit more even. If she gives birth to a zachar, to a male, then she becomes a nida for 7 days min haTorah. If she gives birth to a female, then she becomes a nida mid araisa for 14 days. Again, as matters of that, things are a little bit more than that, but we'll get to that a little bit later. But the basic din of tumas yoledes is pretty much the same as a tumas nida min haTorah, just after nekeva, it's twice as much. So then the Mishnah is described that a woman can become a Yoledes, Tumas Yoledes, even if she doesn't give birth to a live child, or she gives birth to, she's Mapelas, if she has a miscarriage, then she can also become potentially Tumea, Tumas, Nida / Yoledes, even if there's no Dam. Let's say, for argument's sake, a woman has a miscarriage, or she has a regular baby, and there's no Dam. Yeah, it's very, very unlikely medically that such things can happen, but Imtum Sloma, that would happen, she would become a Nida / Yoledes just because of the Vlad itself. So then the Mishnah is going to very, very details in the third paragraph of Nida as to just how far it's considered to be a miscarriage. A woman has a very, very early miscarriage. That's not considered to be a miscarriage. That's not considered to be a vlad yet. It's only considered to be a vlad if it reaches the point where it has a little bit of a tzuras of vlad, and it only begins to get the tzuras of vlad, to take on the shape a little bit of a vlad around after 40 days or so. So that's what the medical textbooks say, that also, that 6 weeks or so after conception is when approximately when there starts to be a little bit of a nika, it starts to have a little bit of a tzura of a vlad. So the Mishnayos have, it's interesting, the Gemara tells a story about Shmuel. Shmuel was not only a Rav and Rashi, he was a doctor also. So he was Rav Yudah Nossi's doctor, the whole story about that. But Shmuel was an expert doctor, and he was an expert scientist. The Gemara speaks about his knowledge of astronomy and other things. So Shmuel used to say that he could look at a vlad, he could look at a miscarriage, and he could tell exactly how old it was. He didn't have any sonograms, he didn't have any mises bismanazet, and he was able to date the vlad just by looking at the vlad itself. So the Gemara considered that to be a tremendous skill that nobody else was able to have. So the Gemara tells a story that there was once a woman who was pregnant, and then she miscarried, and Shmuel was examining the vlad for halachic reasons, for reasons, and he was looking at the vlad, and he was calculating. He told the woman exactly when she became pregnant, and it was an afkamina ladina, how far ahead the pregnancy was. So the woman said, no, the husband said, it's not true. He said he was out of town that week. It can't be. It's impossible. So Shmuel said, I'm telling you, this is the night you became pregnant. And the woman broke down, the Gemara says, and she was molded that she was mazana with somebody else. That Shmuel was able to tell, he was able to date the pregnancy to the date, and he was taka right, that the woman admitted that the child was not the child that didn't live, but the child in theory would have been a mom. So anyway, getting back to this story. The Gemara has a discussion in the third parak of Maseches Nida about what if a woman has what's called Mapelas Chaticha. She miscarries, some flesh comes out, but it's not technically a vlad yet. It didn't reach that stage of 40 days yet. So in terms of Hilchas Yoledes, she would not be Temeah. It's nothing. It's just a piece of skin, just a piece of flesh that doesn't affect her status. But what if there's dam with it? So then the Mishnah says, okay, so then forget about the chaticha. So she's tamei because of the dam. So it's no worse, no better, no worse than any other hilchos nida. So that's the first Mishnah, the third parak of nida. Mapelas chaticha, if a woman gives birth, so to speak, she miscarries, it is chaticha's basar, and there's dam with it, so then she's tamei because of the dam. So Rabbi Yehuda says, it doesn't matter whether there is dam or there's no dam, she's tamei anyway. So the Gemara says, why? Why is she tamei? If there's no dam, there's marashach. There's no, it's not a vlad. But it's not yet 40 days old. It's not dam, because there's no dam. So what could possibly be wrong? So comes Rabbi Yehuda and says, "Eyav shel psichas hakever b'loy dam," that it is impossible for the kever. Here the Chazal used the term kever as referring to the rechem, to the womb. So it is impossible for the womb, for the uterus, to open up without giving out some kind of a dam. So even though we didn't see the dam, she looked, she didn't catch any dam, she didn't see any dam, but it's inconceivable that a chaticha came out and there wasn't some blood that accompanied it. So therefore Rabbi Yehuda says she's temeya because of a chaznida. So Yoledes she's not. All the chumras of Yoledes are 14 days and karbonas and all that story doesn't apply to her, but the basic din of tumas nida applies to her. Because Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to this principle, the seemingly medical principle, it is inconceivable that the kever, the uterus, opens up and nothing comes out, no blood comes out. The Chachamim obviously disagree with that. The Chachamim say that if the chaticha is not yet developed to the point of a vlad, so then the woman is tahora. So the Chachamim obviously hold that efshar l'psichas hakever l'adam, strange machlokes atanoim. So how do we paskin l'halacha? So if you would have asked me, I would have said, we should follow the Chachamim. If Yochad v'rabba l'cha rabim. So, but nobody asked me. The Rishonim said, if you look at the Gemara later on in Nida, so you'll see that the Gemara seems to pass like Rabbi Yehuda. The Amorim seem to assume the halacha like Rabbi Yehuda. And that's how just about all the Rishonim hold, that we pass in the halacha, even though Rabbi Yehuda was a das Yochad in the Mishnah. But the later Amorim accepted his view, and that's the accepted view of the halacha, that in fact, E'ef shel l'psich is a kever b'loidam. With the lone exception of the Rambam. The Rambam happens to not hold the way the Rambam paskins like the Chachamim, but in Shulchan Aruch the Rambam is not quoted. We paskin the Mechaper, the Ramah, the Shach, the oldest standard poskim in Shulchan Aruch. We assume halacha l'maisit, halacha nifsuk already, that e'ef shel l'psichas hakever b'lo dam. Anytime there's a psichas hakever, so then by definition, dam must have come, or may have come, and the woman is automatically considered to be a nida, even though we can't actually locate any real dam. What are the ramifications of the statement of E.F. Shalom Sikh Zakev Bulodam? So there are many, many, very, very real shadows lemaisa that begin with this premise that we accept la halacha E.F. Shalom Sikh Zakev Bulodam. The Gemara Masechta Shabbos uses the same term of psichas hakever in a little bit of a different context. The Gemara is not talking about Hilchos Nida, the Gemara is talking about Hilchos Shabbos. And the Gemara raises the question, at what point does a woman become a Yoledes? We know that a Yoledes, a woman giving birth, a woman in labor, has the status of Pikuach Nefesh and Shabbos, what is permitted to be Mechel Shabbos for her. At what stage in the process of labor does a woman become a Yoledes? At what stage does she become in the status of Pikuach Nefesh? That woman in her ninth month gets a little kvetchy, she feels a little contraction here and there. The Braxton Hicks, no, I'm still calling that? That's still the names? No? something like that. The fake contractions. So she has some fake contractions. That's not pikuach nefesh. She can't run to the hospital because the woman has a contraction once in a while. So at what point do we say that she's already in the state of a suffix sakana? So the Gemara says that the shirim is psichas hakever. That's the lashon. The Gemara uses the exact same lashon. When the woman experiences the time of psichas hakever, once the uterus is starting to open up, the cervix is dilating, whatever modern medical terms you want to use today, but there's some kind of a psichas hakever taking place. So that's the point where the woman is in a state of pikuach nefesh, and from that point on, you're permitted to be mechalel Shabbos for her. So the Gemara says that's very fine and dandy. If you're an OBGYN and you can look and you can see when psichas hakever is, so then you know what it is. And what if you're a regular Baal Bos? So you have no idea was the psichas hakever or not. So what kind of symptoms, what kind of physical symptoms is the woman experiencing that leads us to believe that there probably is a psichas hakever at that point? So the Gemara gives three different shiurim. How could a layman tell that the woman is probably already in advanced enough labor that we can assume it's time to go to hospital? That's basically the shaila that the Gemara is discussing. It's interesting, the post can point out this manazah that this Gemara isn't really relevant for us. Because in the olden days, women gave birth at home. There was no travel time. You had to take into consideration. So the question is, at what point should we start making achanas? At what point can we really honestly be mechal Shabbos when the woman has some kind of a tzarech? So if she's stopped at the beginning of her ninth month and she has a contraction here and there, so you can't start turning on lights for her, you can't start making fires for her, you can't start doing it. There's no tzarech. But once she's already so advanced that she's already at the point of psichas hakever, whatever that is, then we'll see in a moment, so then you can start to be mechal Shabbos. But there's no issue of travel, there's no issue of time to take into consideration. Bizman Azeh, if you're going to wait for the shiurim, and you're going to first go to the hospital after you pass the shiurim, which is mazel tov, you can have a baby in the car. So that goof is going to be a pikuach nefesh. We don't want to have babies in cars. We don't have babies in the right place. We want to have them in the hospital. So the poskim said, Bizman Azeh, you can't go with any of the shiurim anymore. Bizman Azeh, what's the shiur? At what point you call the doctor? At what point you go to the hospital? So the poskim say, whatever you would do on Tuesday, that's what you do on Shabbos. You just use common sense, Bizman Azeh. So it's all nice, the shtickle Torah is beautiful, but it doesn't matter, Bizman Azeh. Because today, since we have that whole factor of travel that Chazal obviously didn't have, the Rishon Shacharich didn't have, so the whole picture is totally different, Bizman Azeh. So Bizman Azeh, for anyone who's interested, the shiur is whatever the doctor tells you. The doctor tells you to call it 5 minutes apart, 7 minutes apart, whatever number the doctor gives you to call during the week, that's when you call on Shabbos as well. But in the good old days, when you didn't have to worry about travel, when everything was done, everything was done at home. So the Gemara says, at what point can you start to be Mechal Shabbos? Assuming there's some kind of a need to be Mechal Shabbos, I mean, you have to figure out whatever the tzarech is. I don't know, you need hot water, you need whatever tzarechim you need. You need lights on, whatever has to be done for the purpose of making the delivery safer. So at what point can you already assume the woman is already in the state of being yoledah? So the Gemara uses this term, psich sekever. And what does it mean, lamaisa? How do you know there is psich sekever? So the Gemara gives three different shiurim. So one shiur the Gemara says is when the woman is starting to bleed. So she's mamish bleeding, dam shel says, then you know that she's already reached a point, obviously that usually comes in a little bit later on in labor. So that's indicative of the fact that she's already reached the point of psich samach, and they can be mechal Shabbos for her. That's one shiur. Then the Gemara gives another shiur of yosheves al hamashber. When she's sitting on the birthing stool. To figure out exactly what the modern day equivalent to that is. Maybe it's called pushing. I don't know. I'm not sure what the modern day equivalent to that is. But Yosheves al Hamashber, Ritzim al Avnayim, like in Parshas Shmos. Then the Gemara goes another shiur. Kol she'ena ish yechol l'aleches v'chavuseh nososah. She can't walk by herself. She needs people to help us, to support her. She's very, very uncomfortable. She can't walk anymore. So that's also considered to be a shiur that most probably there is psichas hamokra at that point. So in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Shabbos, we pass in Halacha all three shiurim l'kula. Pikuach nefesh won't take any chances. So if a woman exhibits any one of these three symptoms, so we can assume that she's reached the point of pikuach nefesh, and we can be mechal Shabbos for her. Again, doesn't matter for us. We're going to be mechal Shabbos for her based on whatever our assessment is, whatever the medical assessment is. We're not going to look in Shulchan Aruch to figure out at what time to call the doctor. We're going to call the doctor whenever we think medically is the right time to call the doctor. But in theory, that's the rule in Shulchan Aruch. In theory, that's what the Gemara says, that when your woman reaches any one of these three stages, you can already assume that there is a psichas hamachor. So came a group of acharonim with the following interesting chiddush. It's like gzeir shav a little bit. It says psichas hakever in Hilchos Shabbos lagabi pikuach nefesh, and it says psichas hakever in Hilchos Nida. Whenever a woman experiences a psichas hakever, so you can assume there was dam there. So come a group of acharonim and say, well, mustama means the same thing. How do you know there's psichas hakever in Hilchos Nida? So you open up Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Shabbos, and you see if it's psichas hakever for one, then it's psichas Shlichus Hakeva for the other also. So how do you know whether the uterus opened? I'm not a doctor. I didn't look inside. How in the world do I know the woman's uterus opened up? So the answer is, let's say she's in labor and she experienced one of these three things. So she's on the mashmer, or she can't walk anymore. Dam shosis, she's in need anyway, fine. So forget about that one. But the other two, a woman is in labor, she's in advanced labor, she hasn't been bleeding yet. We ask, is there any blood? There's no blood. But she can't walk. She's experienced the other two symptoms that are indicative of the fact that there's probably a psichus hakever. So came a group of poskim and said, this woman is now a nida. By definition, she's a nida. It doesn't matter whether she saw blood or not. I don't care whether she's bleeding or not. If she's yosheves al hamashber, or if she cannot walk anymore, so she's reached the point of psichus hamokar for hilchos Shabbos purposes, it's the same shia for hilchos nida purposes, so this woman is asura to her husband from here on in. So this chiddush, this suggestion that was made, now may carry with it a tremendous, tremendous chumrah. Not only does it declare the woman at this stage in labor already a nida, which in and of itself may not be the biggest chum in the world, because if she's already at that point, she's probably going to have a baby pretty soon. But what if the following happens? What if a woman goes into quote-unquote labor, and she's having really serious contractions, and she's having trouble walking, and we hereby declare she's a nida, because she can't walk by herself anymore, so she's reached the point of psichus hamokar, and then the contractions die down, and listen to this, she doesn't have a baby. They send her back home. She doesn't come back for another month. So according to what we just said, she's a nida, because she had psichus hamokar, psichus hakever. The mokar must have opened up. Her riot opened up. She's having such serious contractions. So contractions opens up the mokar. So it must be that the cervix was open sufficiently. And this woman is a nida gemura, because ehev shel psichus hakever below dam. So who said this? So I'll tell you who said this. The Pesachei Tshuva quotes from the Nachal HaShiva, one of the early Acharonim, who quotes a tradition from, catch this one, from the Noshim Sheba Poland, the Polish women, from the Jewish Polish women, not the Polish Polish women, from the Jewish Polish women. There was a Mesorah amongst the women in Poland from the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s, whatever these Polish women were passing the Shaila. There was a tradition amongst the Polish Rebbetzins, the Polish women, that anytime a woman reaches any of these stages towards the end of a pregnancy, we automatically declare her Nida, baby or no baby. Doesn't matter, even if we send her home, she didn't go anywhere. Even if we tell her, sorry, no baby now, come back in another 2 weeks. So she's a Nida Gemura, and she wants to be the husband, she can't go to the mikvah, she counts Shivanikim, go to the mikvah, it works. She's Mamash Anida, Maker, Adin, as a Shabbat, the Raisa, because of those magic words, E. Epshel Psich, the Kevin Blow Dom. That was the Psach, that apparently was the tradition in certain parts of Poland in the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s. That's an Atkan in the name of the tradition of the Noshenship of Poland. So some Acharonim have serious, serious reservations. We don't want to make fun of the Noshim Poland, they're all like great, 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 great grandmas, so we don't want to make litzanos. But some Acharonim had serious reservations with this tradition. They thought this was really a tremendous, tremendous chumrah for the following reason. The Sidrei Tara, one of the Gedolim in Hilchos Nida, wrote in the back of the Yerdei in Hilchos Nida. So the Sidrei Tara quotes this tradition, and he says, it's all right except for one small technicality. The baby. There's no baby. He says, Eav shel psichus hakever lo dam means if the uterus really opens up and a baby eventually comes out, so then we realize, oh yeah, Taka, she was really in need of from before, from the time the uterus opened out. But if there's no baby, says the Siddur Torah, igloy milsa, it turns out that the woman was overreacting a little bit. Maybe I don't want to blame her for it. She had false labor. False labor is not the first or the last woman to have false labor. So those contractions that she had, it wasn't the real contractions. It wasn't a real labor. The whole thing was lahir dvar miyolam. Igloy milslim afrey, retroactively, we realized that the whole thing was dvar betalim. So it says the Sidrei Tara, if she taka proceeds and has a baby, then we realize that the moment that she had these contractions, the moment that she had these symptoms, she taka was in need from that point. But if 10 minutes later we send her home, we realize that the whole thing was a farce, and now she's going to walk around, she goes back to work tomorrow morning. For the next 3 weeks, she's spaziering around town, so she's in Nida because she had an opening of her uterus. And it turns out, that there never really was a psichus hamokar. That's the Sidrei Tara's taina against the Noshim Sheba Poland. But it's interesting, the Sidrei Tara didn't disagree with the fundamental equation of Shabbos to Nida. He's right. I mean, those poskim are right. Earlier, the women in Poland were right that whatever is psichus hamokar for one is psichus hamokar for the other. It's just if and when it results in a real baby. If it doesn't result in a real baby, then it turns out the whole thing was Dvar Betalim. That's the Sidrei Tara's opposition to this Chumrah. The Chavis Das, the Bala Nesivos, has a different opposition to this Chumrah, which is going to be a tremendous Nafkei Min Ladin. The Chavis Das says that the whole thing is not true. The whole comparison is not true. Says the Chavos Das, what do you mean E'ev shel psichas hakeber b'lo dam? What that means is as follows. Like in the case of the Gemara was, the woman's uterus opened up and something came out. So the uterus pushed out something. It pushed out a chaticha. Then we say, if it pushed out the pressure, pushing out a chaticha, the stomach that was bleeding also. The stomach blood came from the endometrial lining at the same time that the chaticha is coming out. If a woman's uterus opens up and nothing comes out, it opens up and closes, that's done. That's not called psichas hakeber. The whole thing is wrong. The whole premise, the whole equation from Shabbos to Nida is absolutely wrong, says the Chavos Das. The Yavshul psichas hakeber l'odam only is when something comes out. If nothing was pushed out, it was just opened up, and therefore what? And there's no baby, there's nothing, so you don't apply that rule. My nafkamina between the opposition of the Sidri Tara and the Chavos Das, a tremendous nafkamina. A regular case, a normal case, a woman goes into labor, she's in the end of her ninth month, she goes into labor, and she's starting to have heavy-duty contractions. She can't walk anymore. She's having trouble walking. She's the doctors, she's already reached the point, she's in advanced labor. She's having trouble walking. Is she a nida? She's not a nida. At that point in time, can she touch her husband? Can she not touch her husband? So according to the women in Poland, absolutely not. According to that first tradition, out of the question, even if the contractions prove to be false, she can't touch her husband until she goes to the mikvah. But those who don't accept that chumrah, those who accept the other acharonim, would they permit the husband and wife to touch each other at that point? So according to the Sidrei Tahara, no. She's a nida unless it turns out that it wasn't a real baby. Unless the Gloy Milsa, that it turns out the contractions were false. But Kol's mom, the contractions seem to be real. She's progressing. She's moving. Things are opening up. So then she's a nida at the time when she can't walk anymore. At the time when she has to be on the birth stool, whatever that means. So according to the Sidrei Tahara, B'Ikaro, we fundamentally do accept this idea of advanced labor being a nida. It just, if it turns out to be real, if it turns out to be false, then retroactively we say it was nothing. But according to the Chavos Das, the whole thing is not true. According to the Chavos Das, the whole thing is Dvar Mitalem. She's not a nida until she starts to bleed, until she has a baby, until the regular Hilchos need to kick in. E'ev shel psichas hakeber b'lo dam is absolutely not correct application in the case of a woman in labor. The whole thing is Dvar Mitalem, says the Chavos Das, that the woman is not a nida until she actually, she's dam, until she gives birth, she's a yoledes. Until then, there's no such thing as just, we don't declare a woman in any stage of labor necessarily as being a nida. So we have three major, major different opinions in the poskim. What's the story here? A woman who's in labor, is she a nida? She's not a nida. Big nafkamina, nafkamina. Can the husband help out? Can the husband hold her hand? Can the husband touch her? Can the husband help? Can the husband look? Whatever. A lot of, even if he's not going to look at the actual birth itself, that's a different problem of looking at that area of the body. But even if she's still tahora, so if she's tahora still, he's allowed to look at other parts of the body that are uncovered. So if when she's a nida, then he's not allowed to look at the makamos mechusa sheba. He's not allowed to look at those parts of the body that are usually covered. So I'm not saying the husband has to leave the room, but he's got to position himself differently once she's a nida. So he can't hold a hand, he can't help him. He's basically in the corner once she becomes a nida. So did she become a nida? Did she not become a nida at that critical moment? So it depends who you ask. If you ask your Polish great-great-grandmothers, they'll tell you, of course she became a nida. What's the shaila? Even if she goes home, she's a nida. And if you ask the Sidrei Tahara, yes, of course she's a nida. But if you ask the Chavos Das, no, she's not. She's not a nida yet. Nothing happened. E'ev shel psichas hakeber b'lo dam is not relevant over here. How do we paskin l'maisa? Machlokes, the Polish women, the Sidrei Tahara, the Chavos Das. Which one of the three? How do we follow halacha? So the shaila becomes even more complicated b'zman hazeh. Because those shiurim that the Gemara give are usually very hard to put into practice today. The two shiurim that the Gemara gives that are relevant l'maisa are the woman who sees Yosheves al HaMashber. Does anyone know what a mashber is? I'm not sure. Does it mean pushing? Maybe. I don't know. Does it mean before pushing? I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know if we have documentary evidence as to when the women used to sit in the mashbers in the 1500s. I don't know. I'm not sure what that corresponds to in today's giving birth process. What about a woman who can't walk by herself? So that becomes even more complicated. Because today, usually the reason why she can't walk by herself is because she was given an epidural. So she's hooked up to tubes. That's why she can't walk by herself. Not because she's advanced in labor. So the woman comes in, she's 1 centimeter. Oh, she's ready, needs an epidural. So I'm not making fun, I never gave birth, so I can't talk for me to make fun. But that in and of itself is not an indicative that she's ein yichol aleches. She can't walk because she's got hooked up to an IV pole. So that's necessarily means Eini Chol Alechas. The whole thing doesn't jive as man as that. So it's hard to put into practice some of the shiurim. So again, we have two very serious reservations about this application of this halacha today. We're not sure whether the din is true altogether. We're not sure. Maybe the Chavos Das is right. The whole thing is not true. And number two, even if it is true, we're not sure what's the modern day in 2009. What does it correspond to? We can't put our fingers on what exactly it corresponds to. So you have different opinions in the contemporary Rabbonim today as to how Lamaisa we should paskin on this. So there are some poskim who go with the old style approach that which is advanced labor. It means whatever it means. It looks to us that this is the pretty close contractions. It looks to us that this is probably psichas hamakor. So then that's it. Finish the woman's anid and then end of discussion. And other Rabbonim say, no, that means we're not mukhiv to make up these new hasharas bezman hazeh. Tachlis. The Didim and the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch and all these Shiurim that the Achorim are talking about, we're not sure any of this is relevant. We're not sure any of it corresponds to anything Bizman Hazeh. Therefore, you go back to the old story. What's the old story? When she has Dam. When she actually sees Dam, that's when she becomes a Nida. That's it, not before that. So that's what many Rabbanim Paskim today. That's the Masorah that I have, is the Paskim like that. That Kozman, that she doesn't have a real Riyaz Dam, so we do not have to be concerned with any of these pre-things. But to be honest, there are a lot of Rabbanim in town who Paskim differently. So again, there are different opinions in the Gedolei Paskim. There are different opinions. So there are different opinions of Lamais amongst different Rabbanim within our own communities. Even those who are Mekil who say that, the Dam is the indicator, anything short of Dam really is not a problem, we should just be quick to point out that that does not mean the following. It's very common that a woman a little bit before she has a baby, so she starts to experience a little bit of spotting, that's not the Dam that we're talking about. That's like the mucus plug, the capillaries and breaking up in the cervix. Those are not really a uterine bleeding. That's an halacha called damaka. That's not something that's from the cervix, not even from the uterus. So that up halacha is nothing. So when a woman has like a little bloody show or something, a day or so before she has a baby, so that's nothing. That's just a kesem yalma. It's a kesem. We could be told that kesem on a maka that she's most likely coming from the cervix. She's usually wearing cold then anyway, so it's not going to be a problem. So that's not considered to be the dam that we're talking about. The dam that we're talking about is in the dam that's coming out in the process of labor when she's actually really starting to, the dam show say she's really starting to bleed significantly. That's considered to be the dam that we're concerned with. That sometimes corresponds with the water breaking, sometimes not. But whenever the dam comes, that's the bottom line. But again, according to the Machmirim, even before that stage of actual dam, even in an earlier stage, if it's a significant advanced part of the labor, that would be a problem. There is a shiloh that always comes up. A woman goes to a doctor in the ninth month, and the doctor says that she's beginning to dilate. So she's 1 to 2 centimeters open already. So does that mean anything? So they asked Rav Moshe, is that psichas hamokom? After all, the doctor says, psichas hamokom, so the mokom is open. So Rav Moshe says, but all women have that. So 99% of the women in the ninth month are that 1 to 2 centimeters. So Rav Moshe said, are you going to tell me that from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, every woman in the ninth month is a surah to her husband? So it must be that's not the Shia. Can't be that little bit of opening at the beginning of the ninth month, when the baby's nowhere near coming, it's hard to believe that that's called a psichas hamokah. So again, we don't have a messer exactly what point it is, but to say that is a psichas hamokah, Moshe says, is highly unlikely. Otherwise, we would be left with the absurd conclusion that every woman in the ninth month is automatically a surah. So what does it mean the woman is 1 to 2 centimeters? So usually the women get very excited on the first baby, so they get very excited. The doctor says, oh, you're ready 1 to 2 centimeters. Well, do the simple math. Very simple. You have to get to 10 centimeters. That's the magic number. So I'm already 2. It means I'm already 1/5 there. So everyone's been telling me that childbirth is so difficult, it's so hard. But I already did 1/5. It didn't cost me anything. It's not... They don't realize that that's 8 and 9 and 10. That's where the problem starts. So they feel good. They figure they're already 1/5 of the way there. But we know that doesn't really mean anything. Anyway, so Rav Moshe says it doesn't really mean anything in halacha either. There is another sugya that's part of this general sugya, part of this general heading of Eif Shal Psichas HaKevah B'lo Dam, which is the second half in the sense of the sugya, which becomes very relevant for us today, and that's the following. This whole sugya of Eif Shal Psichas HaKevah B'lo Dam in the Gemara is all talking about from the inside out. That means something's being pushed out, like the original case of the Gemara, or the baby's pushing out, or the chatichas pushing out. Something's opening up the mokah from the inside. What would the halacha be if somebody, not naturally, but somebody goes artificially, medically, and opens up the mokah from the outside? Say a doctor inserts an instrument into the opening of the mokah. Again, we have to define precisely what that means, the opening of the mokah. Would that be a problem of psichas hakever or not? Big enough kamina dina. A woman goes to the gynecologist, the doctor does a procedure, and that procedure may involve the opening of the mokah. Does the woman become a nida or not? So what's the halacha? So this was a big, big machlekes acharonim. So the Nedi Behuda writes in one of his tshuvas that malip psichas ha-mokha mi-bachutz, ma'bim mi-fnim. So what's the difference? He said, if the mokha was open, it's finished. That's the end of the story. So it doesn't matter whether the mokha was open from the baby pushing out, whether the mokha was open from the doctor pushing in. If the mokha was open, we apply this rule. Chayk lo yava, iyav shalop psichas ha-keva b'ladam, and the woman is automatically in need. That was the famous chumra of the Nedi Behuda. So there were others who questioned his very premise. The Chazon Ish questioned it. Chazon didn't paskin against it, he just questioned it. Other folks can actually paskin against it. That's not true. That ein lanu l'chadash b'etzmeinu, the Gemara always speaks about psicha mi-bifnim, lo hayu dvar miyom, you never heard of such a thing, kol psichas ha-keva b'chutz, the whole thing doesn't exist. Assuming that it does exist, let's take a chumra for a moment, that it does exist, we still have our work cut out for us, because in order for it to be a problem, we have to be certain that we had a psichas ha-mokar, which throws us back to some of the earlier questions we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. Where exactly is the mokar? So if you remember, I mentioned that there's a major, major machlekes ha-poskim as to a very, very small part of the woman's body, which is a tiny part of the body, the cervix. But there was a big machlekes ha-poskim, is that part of the mokar, is that not part of the mokar? So now this is going to become absolutely critical, because basically the shaila is going to be as follows. There are many, many procedures that a woman goes to, standard procedures, that penetrate into the cervix, but do not go into the uterus proper. Do those procedures make her into a need or not? What's the din? So just a woman has a pap smear. Woman has other procedures. They go to check into the cervix. Don't touch the uterus. Does that automatically translate to mean EF shalom psichas ha-kevah below dam or not? That's one question we have to talk about next week. And number two, when we speak about psichas ha-mokor, how pasuach is pasuach? Does pasuach mean a teeny, teeny drop? And we already saw Rav Moshe had hesitations about what the shear is. So many of the procedures, most of the procedures that are done, the instruments that are used are tiny, tiny, tiny instruments. So do those instruments create a problem of psichas ha-mokor? Even if they go into the uterus itself, maybe they're not a problem. So from Mitzvah next week, we have to talk some tachlis, some really lemaisa shailas that come up in terms of different exams, different procedures that are done, which may or may not pose problems of psichas ha-mokor.